be good or be gone. Be good or be gone.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Keisha Gaskins, who is a lawyer, voting rights advocate, and senior counsel for the Brennan Center for Justice's Democracy Program. She has spent much of her career advocating for the rights of underserved populations, especially with regard to voting rights and democratic reform. From 2007 until 2011, she was executive director of the League of Women Voters in Minnesota, which succeeded in registering over 10,000 new voters during her tenure. Welcome to Background Briefing, Keisha Gaskins.
Thank you.
And the Virginia legislature, at least the Virginia Senate, managed to push through a bill where they basically, there are 20 seats each between the Democrats and the Republicans, a 2020 standoff. But one of the Democratic state senators had to go to the presidential inauguration. So they managed to push through this bill one by one vote to have a radical redistricting of the state of Virginia, which is undoubtedly a key swing state. So that sort of got my attention, Keisha, because so many of the redistricting that's taken place in the last few years has taken place in key swing states. So is there a pattern here?
Well, I mean, redistricting takes place in literally thousands of jurisdictions around the country, and it's mandated. It's mandated, of course, following the census to make sure that all electoral districts have equal population under the Constitution. What you're seeing, and I think what you're sensing from the redistricting process, is that because in most states, 37 states to be exact, we leave redistricting up to partisan legislatures. And in most cases, partisan legislatures tend to act in, take advantage of partisanship and try and leverage the redistricting process to best advantage their party. And so we're seeing, you know, as we're seeing simultaneously fewer and fewer divided houses and divided states where there is required to be a compromise, you're seeing single-party legislatures having control over the redistricting process. And this last time, we saw that Republicans, in fact, had control over four times as many districts as Democrats in drawing district lines. But certainly in both cases where we saw single-party control over the redistricting process, we saw single-party benefit in the redistricting process.
So, but this has happened recently in the key states of Pennsylvania, in Ohio, and in Wisconsin as well, has it not?
Oh, absolutely. And certainly we saw, because we saw single-party control in the states you identified, as well as states like Illinois, North Carolina, Maryland, we saw partisan actors really taking advantage of their control in the Senate and or in the legislature. So you saw states like Wisconsin, where they actually changed the law and accelerated the redistricting process in order to avoid the risk that they would lose partisan control in the 2011 special elections. So you did see absolutely extraordinary behavior like you saw yesterday in the Virginia Senate.
So, again, I'm speaking with Keisha Gaskins, a lawyer, voting rights advocate, and senior counsel for the Brennan Center for Justice's Democracy Program. We don't know what's going to happen in Virginia. The governor says he was caught by surprise, but he's noncommittal on the new maps. But there's no question. My understanding, the statistics are pretty clear from the last election that we just had, that a lot more Americans voted for Democrats in the House of Representatives than they did for Republicans, and yet the Republicans have a substantial majority.
Absolutely, and I think, you know, that goes back to really the 2010 electoral victories in the states, where we saw somewhere north of 670 new Republicans take a hold of seats in states across the country. And that control really led to, as I said, four times as many Republican districts controlling four times as many states where Republicans control the line drawing than Democrats. And so you saw this kind of disproportionality in terms of the outcomes, because these states were able to draw like relatively disproportionate lines on a state like, for example, North Carolina, that without a significant change in the electorate went from seven Republicans and six Democrats to 10 Republicans and three Democratic seats. And so it's those types of disproportionality that becomes part of the process when we allow redistricting to be controlled by partisans.
And of course, in the case that just took place yesterday in Virginia, the sort of stealth change, while one of the key Democrats was at the inauguration, in defending what they did, the sponsor of the bill, Republican Senator John Watkins of Powhatan, defended it as an effort to create another majority black Senate district. But what he didn't say is it would create many more GOP-dominated districts. So,
I think that's a result of what is called packing. That when you tend to pack, African Americans in particular tend to skew Democratic. And so when you pack a bunch of Democrats into a single district, that, of course, leaves more capacity to create Republican districts around it. Slate.com certainly came out and said, look, the early analysis is telling us that right now we have a 20-20 split, and the new lines proposed by the Senate looks like coming out close to 13 Democratic districts and 27 Republican districts. So, I mean, we are seeing some significant changes over the current lines, and we will see. I mean, certainly Bob McDonnell said he was surprised. He condemned the action of the Senate, but did not go so far as to say he would absolutely veto.
Well, you know, in yesterday's coverage of the inauguration on MSNBC, Chris Matthews made a statement which got a lot of attention, where he said that he felt that the Republicans, in order to overcome the growing deficit they have in demographics, where more and more young and minorities and women are voting Democrat, that they will make up for it by simply gerrymandering and rigging the vote. I mean, this is beginning to look like maybe Chris Matthews has a point.
I think that Chris Matthews' point is well taken, that when we're talking about the disproportionality, that GOP really have been very effective in leveraging partisan gerrymandering or partisan favored line drawing to compensate for the imbalance between the votes that the Democrats are getting right now over the Republicans.
So, what then? If the Democrats don't wake up, I don't know what can they do. Do the same thing? I mean,
I think the challenge is these lines are in place for the next 10 years. I don't know if the Democrats can kind of wake up and fix it. Certainly, the Cook Political Report came out and said the Democrats might need to win 55% of all House votes cast in order to win a majority at any point in the next decade. Okay.
So that's how far behind they are in terms of...
That's how far behind. And to tell you how frequently that's happened, in the 13 of the last 15 cycles, neither party has hit 55% of the vote. So it is, I mean, the way the lines are drawn has presented a seriously heavy lift for the Democrats to overcome the way these lines have been drawn. And it's really, You know, to suggest that Democrats need to wake up and sort of fault of Democrats, it's actually the fault of how we've allowed lines to be drawn. Certainly over time, Democrats have benefited when Democrats have been in control. Now the Republicans are in control and they're benefiting from these lines. And we saw when the Democrats were in control in the 80s, we saw some similar types of things where where in, I'm sorry, it was in 1990, where Republicans won 46% of the popular vote, but only 38% of the House seats. So this behavior isn't particularly new. What we are seeing, however, with that is particularly new is the disproportionality of it, how big the gaps are, how difficult those gaps are overcome over time.
So, in other words, even if the Democrats had a Karl Rove who had that kind of strategic vision to go after these...
Karl Rove's vision and a whole lot of money didn't buy him a lot last time.
True, but over the last 10 years or the last few years, they've done incredibly well, and they put it in place for 10 years. So that's a big hill to climb for the Democrats.
Right.
I mean, my understanding is there is at least an example of an alternative to this crooked partisan game playing that's been going on forever in terms of districting. That's what we have now in California.
Yeah, there's a number of alternatives that seem to be working. You certainly have what you all have in California with the nonpartisan commission, and that something similar to Arizona and other places where they have the commission. If you look at Florida, it's also a really good example. You had complete Republican control over both houses and the governorship. They had two new congressional seats, but because Florida's electorate had made a constitutional amendment to change what criteria by which they controlled the legislative redistricting, none of those new districts were under Republican control. They actually had created a new minority population district and a new Democratic district, and that was simply the legislature still did it, but it was because of the way they changed the criteria. So that's another example of how redistricting can be done without necessarily, and leave it in the hands of the legislature, but not necessarily result in these same kinds of outcomes. There certainly are other plans that are advocated that are a lot more radical, that involve getting rid of redistricting altogether, going to multi-member districts, changing the way we think about how people are represented. But certainly under our existing rubrics, looking at single-member districts, independent commissions are an option. Changing how we look at the redistricting cycles are an option. Some would advocate for changing the timing of redistricting. And so there's all kinds of different options out there, but certainly the most recent and obvious examples are those like in California, Arizona, and Florida.
Well, just in closing then, Keisha Gaskins, hasn't this redistricting and this gerrymandering by dividing these congressional seats up in such a way that they look like some weird amoeba, and there's no coherence to them except they're sort of skirting different demographic blocks. And you were mentioning earlier, you know, a heavily African-American district is considered Democrat. And what's this obviously leading to is a lot of safe seats on both sides, where you have far more partisan representation because they're safe, and they don't have to, unlike their colleagues in the Senate who represent the whole state, they don't have to moderate their views.
And that's certainly a concern. There are, you know, while I don't want to put too much of a benefit on simply having uniform districts, I know there's an idea that says districts should be circular, they should be square. But in fact, we don't live in perfect circles. We don't live in perfect squares. How district lines are drawn can be responding to any number of things, not just partisan pressures. But there is a very serious concern that where partisans are able to draw lines in a way that disproportionately allow them to gain and keep control over the legislature is where we also see opportunities for really bad and non-representative legislative action. And, you know, I don't know that the answer is necessarily safe seats or not safe seats, but we do know that part of the answer is making sure the seats are actually representative of how people live, how people vote, and what we're seeing is disproportionality based on and drawing lines in a very, shall we say, creative way to ensure partisan victories.
Well, something's rotten in the state of Denmark if we have Absolutely. Less turnover in the U.S. Congress than they used to have in the Supreme Soviet, of the rubber stamp parliament of the former Soviet Union. So,
and I think,
fact.
These are all political issues that sort of play against each other. But right. at the end of the day, drawing districts in a way that don't represent the electorate, that that protect parties and incumbents, and while not doing a good job in representing people, is a very serious problem.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, Keisha Gaskins.
Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Keisha Gaskins, who's a lawyer, voting rights advocate, and senior counsel for the Brennan Center for Justice's Democracy Program. She spent much of her career advocating for the rights of underserved populations, especially with regard to voting rights and democratic reform. From 2007 until 2011, she was the executive director of the League of Women Voters in Minnesota, where she succeeded in registering over 10,000 new voters during her tenure. We're going to take a brief station break and be back talking about how long the cover-up within the Catholic Church, particularly here in the largest diocese of Los Angeles, has gone on, and recent revelations of how much Cardinal Mahoney was responsible for covering up abusive priests.
Behind the scenes, they grow their schemes, hiding.